Today on Family Talk.
Well, welcome everyone to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker here with a wonderful, wonderful guest at Dave Ramsey's Smart Conference at the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles, California. Our guest today is someone who I have a great admiration for.
I'm not a doctor.
He's a wonderful friend,
Dr. Dobson, very funny man. Dr. Meeker, and me.
And one of the most brilliant people that I've ever spoken to, and that is Andy Andrews. Andy is a New York Times bestselling author of multiple books, and he has been described by Zig Ziglar as one of the best speakers he's ever seen. He has also been touted as someone who has quietly become one of the most influential people in America. And I believe that. Andy, welcome to Family Talk.
Hey, I am very excited to be here.
You are beginning a different project, and that is parenting. And I'm thrilled that you are doing it because I know you know a lot more about parenting than I do.
No,
I don't mean to
tread on your territory. I never really intended to move in this direction professionally.
So what prompted you to take on parenting?
Well, having kids, that'll do it, you know. Because I've always described myself more as a noticer.
Yes, you are.
Like kind of a professional noticer. I mean, because I always think, you know, when God was passing out talents, I didn't get the cool ones. I can't run fast. I can't sing great. But I do notice little things that make a difference. And so as I was raising my boys, or continuing my wife and I raising our boys, you can't help but notice things that work, that don't work. And so one of the things that is very curious to me that I believe that many people do not delve into is, why did that not work? Or why does that work?
If we notice it at all, and again, I want to mention that The Noticer is the name of one of your great books,
right.
And The Noticer Returns, another great book. But parents don't notice. Do you think we're just too busy, or do you think that we read the way things should be done in raising children and we jump on that train and we just do it over and over and over?
I think that there's a lot of validity to that.
Mm-hmm.
As I started looking at this, I never intended to really talk about it. My area of you know, whatever we might think is expertise, it was not this. And yet, when Polly became pregnant with our first boy, Austin's 15 now, mm-hmm. Adam is 12, mm-hmm. I was kind of panicking. I was reading everything I could get my hands on, and I noticed it seemed like there was two different kind of things going on. One was what I call the statistical model, where people would say, okay, the statistics say this and the statistics say that. And if you look at the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and look at where we're going. And so you kind of get to a point where you go, well, statistically, I should be doing this. And the other model is the new thing.
You're right, because about every 10 or 15 years, a new group of professionals come up to say, oh, no, we've done it all wrong.
Right.
Let's try our way. And that has a run of about 10 years, and then it goes away.
And see, what I was really looking for, and I didn't know it at the time, but now I can articulate exactly what I was looking for. What I was looking for is for somebody to say, if you do this, this is what will happen. And it will happen that way every time. That's what I was wanting.
Did you notice that as you were raising your children, or were you frustrated because you were trying things that didn't work every time?
Well, I was frustrated for a while, but I got to say, I'm an old dad, okay? I'm 55 now, and so I was 40 when Austin was born.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that has good things and bad things. The bad thing is that everything they want to do is on the floor. You know, it's like, Dad, come down here. No, let Daddy sit on the couch. No, Dad, come down here.
Yeah.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But the good thing is I had the benefit of watching most of my friends raise their kids. Right.
Yes.
And so I got to see and question and talk to Polly. We would talk about, okay, well, why is this and why are they doing that and why do it? And so I had that benefit. But as our lives started to unfold, I knew I was looking for more than a 50-50 outcome. And I got to be honest with you, and this sounds awful to say, but even Christians, I don't think that generally we have a greater outcome than non-Christians. I mean, I think we do things differently,
mm-hmm.
but as far as how it turns out—
Define outcome. I know what it is by what you're working on, but what is the outcome?
Well, my outcome, and that was one thing that I realized, is that I realized that people were going for the wrong outcome. Because you talk to people all the time and say, what are you after as a parent? And people will say, I just want to raise great kids, man. I'm thinking about raising great kids every day. I get up every day. I pray for them. I think about them all day. We pray at night. I just want to raise great kids. That is like the focus of my life. And I have come to understand that, well, there's your problem. Because you want to raise great kids. Okay, that's a problem because that is not the target you want to hit. What you really want to do is raise kids who become great adults. It's a totally different target, and because it's a totally different target, there are different paths that go to each target. Okay, we know people who raise great kids, don't we?
Yes, we do.
They had great kids.
Yes.
And then something happened when they went away from home. And so there is a process of explanation. There's a process of understanding that has to occur before they leave.
So you're really talking about raising great kids first worrying about raising great adults?
No, I am talking about everything being focused on raising kids who will become great adults. That is the focus. I think everybody focuses on raising great kids. Well, you can have great kids because you can make them do whatever you want them to do.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you're bigger than they are. You got all the money. You can make them do whatever you want, but there is coming a time that they're going to be away from you. And if their thought process has not been affected and changed for their own reasons and made total sense to them, you're going to have problems. You would not believe, Meg, how many people I talk to who have challenges with their adult children.
Yes.
I guess I would.
I would. So I just want to clarify for our listeners, what you're really talking about is raising kids with your eye on the prize, which is a 25-year-old great man or woman. Is that
summarize it? That's exactly right.
Okay.
And the thing is that when we do that, there is so much that we think logically about in our society. And it brings us insufficient conclusions. We're not getting the results we would like, okay? Mm-hmm. And yet the process seemed so logical. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you know, it seems logical. People say, I want to raise great kids. That's my focus, raising mm-hmm. great kids. And most people go, well, good for you, man. That's awesome. You know, mm-hmm. well, it's not awesome. Okay, because
we're making mistakes.
Yeah, you want to raise great kids, you got a 50-50 chance. Go flip a coin as to how they're going to turn out.
Can you give me, Andy, a specific example of one of the mistakes that parents make over and over that has a bad outcome or less than 50-50 outcome?
Sure. Now, overall, philosophically, it's not understanding why what we do works or why it does not work. And that's just a covering. Okay, but if you got down to a little thing, here's one. I am shocked at how many parents I have talked to, Christian parents, that they don't want to be mad at God and they don't want to doubt the Bible. They just kind of can't help it because they'll tell you, they'll say, you know that verse? Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is grown, he will not depart from it. Mm-hmm. Well, we did that. And now look.
Got it.
In their minds, they have done exactly what it said to do because they made sure they were in church on Wednesday night. They made sure they were in Sunday school. They made sure they put the mojo on them. They did not let them watch much TV. They did not let them go out on Friday nights. They didn't get a date until they were 17. They did not drink. I mean, in their minds, they trained up this child in the way that he should go. And what happens is the best that happens many times is there's like a 5 or 6 year period that the kid goes crazy and then they kind of come back and at least there's an uneasy truce for the rest of the life of the parents and people go, okay, so, you know, he didn't really totally, but that's not the best. I mean, the Bible, it says God wants his best for us.
Yes.
Was that the best? That's not the best, okay?
So let me back you up. Should those parents not have made sure their kids were in youth group on Wednesday night and church on Sunday morning? And
no. Here's the thing. Here's the issue. They totally misunderstood what Solomon wrote. Because Solomon wrote, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's grown, he'll not depart from it. Solomon did not write, make a child do exactly what you want him to do, and when he's 18, he'll keep doing it for the rest of his life. He didn't write that. Okay? And so
we think he did.
Right.
We think he did.
And so you know how we get on our teachers in our society and we say, don't you teach my kid what to think. You're there to teach my child how to think. Well, that's very true. But the problem exists when we bring our child home and then we teach them what to think.
Exactly.
It's just as dangerous as anybody else teaching them what to think, because if we only teach a child what to think, when they turn 18 and get away from home, they will immediately begin to explore the validity of everything they have been told to think. But if we teach them how to think, if we train up a child in the way that should go, which is teaching them how to think, which is long conversations about why we believe what we believe and how we came to that conclusion.
Well, and it's also willing to be getting into debates with your kids.
Right.
Because you and I know, you know, you've got two teenage boys right now, and they want to challenge Dad on everything because they want to know, is this really true or is it really not true? A, that's uncomfortable for a lot of parents. B, it takes time. And I'm really concerned, as I've seen the influx of electronics into every, you know, crook of every kid's life, that they have less and less time to think, and parents have less and less time to teach them how to think. So really, Andy, what you're talking about is you have a picture of that son or daughter in mind as an adult, and as you're talking to them when they're 12 and 15 and 10 and 8, how do I get that young man or woman to a place where they can do this on their own? What do you do, however, when you have a 4 or 5 year old kid who can't think like you, and you can try to articulate these things, and they
this
look at
really
you and go,
good.
Huh?
This is really good. This is really good. Okay, that's a great question. You know, Solomon said, discipline a child while he is young, or you will ruin his life. Okay. We talk to a lot of parents, especially grandparents, who will look at the way their child is raising their grandkids, and they'll go, now, you know, she wasn't raised that way, but she married him, and this is the way he believes, right?
Yeah.
Okay? All right. But see, here is a huge issue. Now, this is a side issue, but this may be the biggest issue. If we want to change society, we can see pockets of huge success. We can see generational parenting occurring in this family for 6 generations. By any stretch of the imagination, they know how to do it. But until they can explain why what they do works and why it will work for you every time, until they can explain why, it's for everybody else. That's just their opinion.
But what if they don't know?
They don't. They don't. You're exact. I mean, it's not a what if they don't. They don't. Even the people who are having great results, they know how to do it.
But they
don't
know
why. Okay? And so until we can explain why. All right, so go back to this King Solomon thing about discipline a child while he is young or you will ruin his life. Well, you see many grandparents looking at their kids, raising grandkids, going, you know, I mean, they kind of negotiate with them. They, you know, they count and they say, stop, I'm counting to 5, just now stop. And they negotiate because they feel like they're, you know, they deserve their respect. Okay, that's fine. But here's what we do as a society. What we do is with those little kids, we negotiate with them, and then when they act up in restaurants or act up on airplanes, you know, we say, can we have some crackers over here too? Give me your keys. Jingle, jingle, jingle. Here, honey, look at this, look at this. And we tell the people around us, he's just a child. He's just a child. I mean, what do you expect? He's just a child. Okay, so then this child turns 7 or 8, and this child is acting this way.
Yes.
And now we say to this 7, because we tighten up a little bit, we say to the 7-year-old, hey, dude, you're 7 years old. 7-year-olds don't act this way. Well, in his mind, it's been all right so far. You never had a problem with it before. Okay?
Yeah.
And so now the child turns, you know, 10, 11, 12. It gets to be 13. And our friends say, whoop, you better tighten up, man. You got a teenager now. You're fixing to have the sarcasm, the rebellion. You better tighten up. And we do tighten up. And we say to them, what are you thinking? And then they turn 15 and we're like, I don't know if I can give you a car next year. I don't know if I can allow you out of my sight to drive by yourself. And so we tighten up. Well, at 17, we're really tightening up because we're back in the bedroom panicking. We're going, right. I don't know if they're ready to leave home.
Right.
All right. But it's exact opposite of what Solomon says. It's just that people have not stopped to figure out why. See, Solomon says, discipline a child while he's younger to ruin his life. This is why. Solomon says, hammer them when they're little. When they're 3 and 4, you make sure that child
We don't
minds,
mean literally.
Yeah,
physically.
Yeah, I don't
just
mean,
for, yeah,
right.
Okay.
Yeah, that you need to make sure that child minds, that child obeys, right now because I said to obey that you stop. When I tell you to stop. Now, we're doing this not because we're bullies. Well, we know at some point this kid's going to be running into traffic.
Right.
We can't follow him and count.
Mm-hmm.
We got to make sure that Johnny stops, okay? But the broader view, Solomon says, if you don't do this, you're going to ruin his life. Okay, so what does that mean? Okay, here's what it means. When this child at 3 years old is taught to stop, is taught to mind, well, there's something odd that goes on because this child, even though he stops, because he has been trained to do what mama says the first time without question, when this child stops, subconsciously, this child is very aware that he wants to continue on, but he stopped. And the reason he stopped because he doesn't want to be punished. Okay, and so he is being disciplined, but that first subconscious thought is his first idea of self-discipline, of doing something. He is aware that he can make himself do something he doesn't want to do
mm-hmm.
to get a result that he does want to have.
Right.
So we get that firmly entrenched. Well, now when the child's 8 or 9 or 10, we should be able to back up a little bit, just kind of pull back a little bit and say, you know, when he says, can I do this? Well, I don't know. Can you? What do you think? What do you think about it? How would you decide? And then if he decides, well, we go, that's great. Yeah, okay, I think you can. But if he doesn't, we can talk. We're right there. He's working with a net. Now the child turns 13. We should be able to back off a little bit more, okay?
Because so rather than tightening as the child gets older, you tighten early and then you loosen up as they go.
You should be able to loosen. Because everybody, this is the last point. Everybody experiences this teenage thing, this rebellion. Well, you know, they think they're adults. And so when we do tighten up on them, their natural tendency is to. But if they are proving along the way that their thinking is advancing, that their self-discipline is there, that they're going after the right things, we should be able to back up, loosen up. And I mean,
you know, I completely agree with you, because one of the things that I commonly see with parents is that from 0 to 8, kids are pretty fun. They're cute. They hug you. They giggle. They laugh. They make you angry because they spill things. They run around. But basically,
right.
We can endure them.
Right.
So we don't want to have a confrontation with them. We want to talk with them. We want to teach them. Let's count to 5. Now, why do you think you count to 5? What color? That kind of thing. And then the older they get, they start to get under our skin. Puberty comes along. And we haven't really disciplined them. Or let me say this. I think that many kids really don't understand that the parent is the authority. Oh. Mom or dad is the end all. You have to do what we say. And what I see then is these kids become 14 or 15, and now these parents who have been really quite permissive and loving and kind and explaining things to kids who couldn't explain what they're talking about.
Now they're tightening up.
Now they're tightening up, and the kids are mad.
Yeah.
And they're mad. So really what you're saying is really, really shore things up early. And I will often tell parents, you know, you better get control when he's 5, because if you don't, when he's 16, he's going to have car keys in his hands and you need him to listen to you.
Right.
Andy, you talk about correction versus discipline. What's the difference?
You know, discipline, when I think of discipline, I think of discipline as something that is totally in my hands. It's under my control. And you're going to have to sit there and endure it. And
yeah.
You're going to have to. Okay, but correction is something that goes into our thoughts of change. How somebody changes, okay? And so when we're talking about correction generally can happen very easily if it's for them, if they figure out what's in it for them. With my 15-year-old, people are kind of amazed right now that we have this awesome relationship and we have fun, and they're just amazed.
Which I think, by the way, is the way it's supposed to be.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I think this whole idea of teenagers going nutty is an American cultural thing.
I agree.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree. But one of the things that I did when Austin was 12 or 13, right around in there, is I sat down with him and I explained why we were going to have long conversations, okay? And the why to that was that I wanted the very best for him, that it said in the Bible that God wants his best for you. And I told him, I said, now, dude, you know I make you do whatever I want to right now because I got all the money and I'm bigger than you, okay? But I love you. I said, Mom and I, we thought we loved each other until you guys came along. I said, if somebody told me right now I could dive in front of a truck and the rest of your life would be 100% A1, I'd look for the truck like now. And I said, I love you so much more than myself. I want the very best for you. I said, now, Austin, you know that I'm like a flawed human being. I'm learning, too. I'm trying to figure stuff out, too. And I said, so we're going to have these long conversations because I'll be honest with you, there are going to be times, knowing that I want the best for you, God wants the best for you, and you want the best for you, the best is one thing. You know, there is some of the best. There are things that are among the best. But if we're talking about the best— well, that's one thing, okay? And so there are going to be times when you and I look at a situation and I'm going to know what's best. Now, I'm not going to impose that on you because I'm smart enough to know the second you get away from me, you do what you want to anyway.
Right.
And so there are going to be times I know what's best. And so we're going to literally sit there and we're going to talk until—
he figures it out.
Until you figure it out. Okay. I said, now, Austin, so there's going to be some times that I'm going to be wrong, and you really are going to know what's best. Mm-hmm. And we're going to sit there and talk until you convince me and that I understand. I said, but then there's going to be times neither one of us knows what's best. And we're going to talk until, and then we sat down, Meg, and we figured out what would be the best you can ever imagine at age 25.
And you let him fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now—
but what if he fills in blanks that make you go, oh, you're kidding. I don't want you to be that.
Okay. But see, I'm able to—
question? Do you really want that?
That's a conversation.
Okay. That's a conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
So where do you want to live, Austin? What do you mean? Well, you want to live in the city. When you're 25, what's the best you can possibly imagine? You live in the city, you live in the suburbs, you know, the mountains, the water? Oh, the water. Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Okay. The water. Saltwater or freshwater? Well, saltwater. Okay, so
these are long conversations.
The bay, the Gulf, the beach, the lagoon, a brackish river, the lagoon. Okay, so you're going to live on the lagoon, north side or south side? Oh. The north side. You're going to live in an apartment or a condo or a little house. All right, and so we had this.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. You know, if he says something, well, I want to do this. And so, okay, now let's think about this. Is this what you really want? Because here's your options. And, oh, yeah, you're probably right. So we end up with, you know, he wants to have a little house, be totally debt-free at 25. You know, we got it lined out. So now, anytime there's anything we talk about, I can say, you know what? Knowing where you want to go. People who act like that, they don't live debt-free on the lagoon at 25.
You know, really what a marvelous gift to give a child, which is a visual of what their life will be at 25. And once you do that and they agree with you and they like it and they're motivated to get there, discipline's kind of easy.
It is easy.
Does going out and getting a girl pregnant at 16 get you to that condo on the north side of the lagoon?
Right.
Yes or no? Well, you wanted it, but I don't want it now. What do you do if a child says, you know, they change their mind?
Well, first of all, it's a constant thought. And as a parent, you should have a broader view. And you should be able to see what's coming. You're the field general. Okay, you got your private here. And so your private kind of knows what's in front of him. Mm-hmm. And he's grabbing for anything. Okay, but you should have the larger view. So Austin, boy, he may kill me if he hears this, but, you know, he recently had his first date. Well, knowing this was coming up a month before, I'm having a conversation with him about girl things that nobody thinks about. And I told him, I said, dude, you are different than I was. I said, because you're good looking, you know, and I was kind of weird looking in the ninth grade. I said, and you have an awesome personality. You're not a braggart. People like you. I said, but Austin, I want you to think about something because you have to be ready for this. I said, because at some time, it may be next week, it may be next month or next year, but it's coming. Mm-hmm. Your looks and your personality, how you are going to allow you into a place that your character is going to have to decide whether you stay or not.
Right.
And there will be a moment that you're going to have to say, this might be embarrassing if I stop. This might make somebody mad if I stop.
And what will you do?
Yeah, but what will you do? Yeah. See, if we live our lives according to principles, then we don't have to make these willy-nilly decisions. We already know what we're going to do, and so we don't have to think about it so much.
Right.
You know, a principle for me early on is that I would not be sponsored by a beer company or an alcohol company. And so when one of them offered me a six-figure deal just to put their sign behind me as I traveled around and spoke, I didn't have to think, you know, I ain't got any money.
Done deal.
And they're, look at what they're offering. I didn't have to think about that.
Right.
The answer was no. I'd already decided.
Yeah. Well, Andy, this has been amazing. I love to talk to you. I love to listen to you talk.
I love
we could
to
go
talk
on
to
for
you.
A couple of hours, because I know that there are 21 results that parents should strive for with their kids, and people are just going to have to go out and buy your books and read everything, aren't they? We're just going to leave everybody hanging right
that
there.
That would be nice.
Just hanging right there. But I love your whole thought process, which is basically, why does it work? Prove to me it works. If you can't prove it works, then it's just not going to. Well, I hope that you will come back with us sometime here in Family Talk. You are just always a delightful guest. That closes out for what we have today. If you would like more information on Andy Andrews and one of his many wonderful books, please go to our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. Thank you for joining us today on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. We'll see you next time.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.